Walking Dead Season 6, Episode 11 is over, but we are just getting started here on The Walking Dead Live. And now, here are the two guys who, when it's raining, we're wearing galoshes, even three pairs. I'm Rob Cisterna. Here's Josh Wigler. Josh, how are you?
Hi, Rob. Actually, you got my name wrong. It's Natalie.
Natalie, I'm sorry. Yes, that's Natalie is here with us. Was I close?
Time. You're not that close, to be honest with you. Yeah.
All right.
Just off by a little.
Ready to talk about an episode where we're going on the road and visiting a whole new community, Hilltop, and they are not, much like any place in The Walking Dead, they are not without their own share of problems. And we'll be talking about the commerce, the state of commerce and trade in The Walking Dead universe here tonight.
Yeah, this is a new one, trading murder for grains. That sounds fun. That's a good
deal.
This
is how you get the grain. Yeah. First, you commit the murder.
You find Negan. Then you have to kill Negan. Then you get the sorghum and the rye and the barley.
All right, so we'll be talking about all that here tonight, live, February 28th, 2016. We're going to be taking your questions as well, like we always do here on this show, hashtag PS Recaps. Also on our YouTube channel at postshowrecaps.com/YouTube. Ready to talk about everything. And we will be giving out a slew of awards to the Walking Dead cast tonight.
Oh, that seems appropriate. So is this like the impromptu walkers? This is like our equivalent of the throners for The Walking Dead. We're just going to do that on Oscar night?
Yes.
I didn't talk to DJ Sammy Slayer. I don't have any music lined up.
Yeah. Okay. Any relation to DJ Tanner?
No. Tanner are we talking
about? Which DJ Tanner? Exactly. Yeah. All right. So, Josh, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. I'm excited. You know, I've been waiting for this episode for a while, or at least certain events from this episode for a while. As you guys know, I read the comics, so I know a little bit about what's happening on the show ahead of time. And the Hilltop was one of those things that I knew that was something that we had to get to on The Walking Dead, probably this season. When Jesus was introduced last week, that's a very clear, you know, sign that we're getting to that stuff pretty soon. And I love the Hilltop story. I think it's a really cool story in The Walking Dead. So for this to be introduced in the back half of season six, this early on in the back half, I'm excited about where we could go, and I think there's a lot to unpack.
What was it in particular that you were excited about? Is it something that has not come yet, or something that happened tonight?
Well, I think a lot of stuff that hasn't come yet, but stuff that happened tonight, like Rick's brawl with that one guy who tried to kill George Mason from 24. That was pretty fun. But, you know, there just the arrival of George Mason from 24. I'm sure we'll talk a lot about Xander Berkeley's new character on the show. But I think it's really that thing that Jesus says to the group in the morning, you know, in the cold open, that closes out the cold open when he's telling them, I come from a place. It's not that dissimilar to you guys. We have stuff. You have stuff. We like to trade with other communities. Maybe we can set up some sort of deal with you guys. And Rick or Michonne or somebody says, wait, when you say communities, you mean you're doing this with other people? And Jesus says, oh, your world's about to get huge. And I loved that moment in the comics. I love that moment here on the show. I love that implication that there's a world out there that's bigger than Rick Grimes and the Rick Grimes gang. And we're starting to move into that territory. And, you know, we talk a lot about, is The Walking Dead too big? Is the cast too big sometimes? Well, we just open up the world by a lot. And I actually think that that's kind of a counterintuitive solution to what you would normally think. It's like kill off everybody on the show, trim down the cast. I think blowing up the world is another way of kind of making things a little more blended in and seamless. So I love that idea, and I'm really excited that we got there in the show.
I agree with you. I think that that was a very exciting prospect. But did they actually deliver on that? It sounds like, from what we understand, unless there are other groups that also Negan is terrorizing, and then all of the victims of Negan are out making trades with each other also, in addition to whatever Negan doesn't take from them. It sounds like the trade that's being made is Negan trades you half of your stuff for him not killing you.
Right. It's a terrible deal. Bad deal. If you're getting caught in the Negan trade, it's a bad place to be. In terms of seeing like a great amount of characters, we really only did see the Hilltop, but Jesus makes reference to the fact that, you know, your world's about to open up. There's more out there. So no, it's not like we are suddenly introduced to like every possible community, city, whatever in The Walking Dead. But the suggestion that there's more out there is really, really awesome. And I love the people from the Hilltop. I like that community. I like that that they keep watch on their wall with spears is pretty wild. I think that's fun. So yeah, I'm a big fan of this stuff, and I think that the Hilltop story is going to take us to some really awesome places.
Should The Walking Dead change up the opening to more mimic the Game of Thrones opening credits so we can see where all the communities are?
Well, if there's a ton, if there's enough that we have to like do a little bit of like a Seven Kingdoms of Alexandria, that could be fun.
Yeah. And then can the Fear the Walking Dead be like the Daenerys storyline happening somewhere across the desert?
Yeah. When are the Manawas finally going to get to Westeros? When is that happening?
Okay.
It's taking way too long. They're crossing the narrow sea as we speak.
All right, well, let's talk about the headlines from tonight. And I guess the top story is that we are in the Negan business officially.
We are, yeah. Well, you know, Negan is being brought up more regularly on the show. You and I kind of talked about this during our feedback show earlier in the week of, like, it's pretty weird that Rick didn't mention Negan once, that Negan's name didn't come up at all in last week's episode. Could it just be solved if, you know, Rick has some sort of throwaway line about Negan? Which he does in this episode. He really just basically says, yeah, Daryl and Abraham met up with this guy named Negan's group, and it seems like they're no good. So, obviously, they were aware of it, but he is now a more present threat on the show. He's now a more looming presence. I think that's cool. What's your take on this so far?
Yeah, I think that we certainly seem like we have a direction for where we're going now in the back half of season six, that they seem like they're going to go off and plan this attack next week. And then maybe the week after we'll get into the actual operation against Negan.
Yeah. What do you think of Negan so far? I mean, he is, as Daryl says, right now, he's a bit of a boogeyman. He's not somebody that we have seen in the flesh. We know an actor has been cast as that character, so Negan will show up eventually. But based on what we heard about him in this episode, we heard some stuff. We know what Negan's deal is with the Hilltop. 50% of your stuff and we won't kill you. We know that he made good on that deal by killing a, what was it, 16-year-old kid in front of all these people. He sent assassins to go kill George Mason from 24. So this is all pretty serious stuff. What's your take on this guy based on the information we know so far?
Oh, I think that Negan is definitely a badass, and I think that he seems like he's somebody who is sort of like running like the mafia here in the Walking Dead post-zombie apocalypse world, where he's basically taking everything that he wants from the people and for the saviors. So I think that Negan seems like he's going to be a major part of the Walking Dead story moving forward. So I don't think it is going to be quite as easy as, okay, we'll just go kill him and then we'll bring back the stuff.
Right. I like that idea. Negan, like the head of the mafia, like the Negan Family Crime Syndicate.
Yeah, exactly. Just like that. And so we end up with, it really is a big night for Maggie. And
it is.
Between so many different things, between, you know, the relationship between her and Glenn, and then she gets to go on the road trip, and then she's sort of like holding Jesus at gunpoint, which I was sure was going to be something that backfired.
Thing.
Yeah.
You thought it would be a thing.
Yeah, I thought it would be a thing. I really was like, we're going to go with this guy that's like basically the Houdini that even Rick and Daryl couldn't keep this guy at bay last week, that we're just going to like, all right, Maggie, you watch this guy.
Well, Maggie's a badass. That's great. That's established and everything. But Maggie's also a badass with child currently.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you're going to leave her behind to deal with this guy? What if he is lying? What if this is a trap? And now suddenly she's the one who's, like, in immediate danger. So, yeah, questionable decision at best.
Didn't bear out, though. Ultimately, though, Maggie is put in the position of being the lead negotiator with Gregory in the Hilltop negotiations. Josh, did this strike you as being odd at all that Maggie was the person really on the front lines in this negotiation?
Well, I think that they've been, you know, the show has been putting, you know, putting track down for something like this. I think that, you know, you had Maggie in the back half of season five really closely associated with Deanna, is sort of Deanna's number, you know, second in command, her right hand person. And I think that you get the sense that Maggie is being groomed for like a political career. I don't feel like the show necessarily did enough to really solidify that. I feel like that was the intention of the show. I don't know that there was enough that happened, especially because most of season six took place during one 24-hour period, that I don't feel like Maggie as like a diplomat. I don't feel like that ever really bore out believably for me. But that's where we are, and that's where we are with Maggie right now. And I think that, you know, it's a cool use of the character. It gives her a very specific utility on the show.
It made no sense to me why Maggie is having, like, I was saying,
I'm
does Rick
to be
even
diplomatic over here? Yeah, right?
Well, look, we got to keep
you
it
can,
real.
You can be the Gregory. I'll be the Maggie.
That's fine. That's fine. Let's that's the common folks say. I don't understand why Maggie was put in this position without even Rick being in the room.
I get why Rick didn't want to be in the room, because he took one look at this guy and goes, I'm going to punch his face off. And it's probably better if I am removed from that process. I think that Rick knows that he is no diplomat. Rick is the guy that you call when someone needs to get stabbed in the neck in broad daylight. I don't think that Rick feels like he is the person to handle the diplomatic stuff. So I think that, you know, thinking back on it, back when the prison had counsel, back when the council was a thing, was Maggie on the council? Wasn't Maggie part of that squad?
I don't know. It seems a little bit of nepotism there. Herschel and Maggie be on the council?
Yeah. Or was it Glenn that was on council? Maybe
I think it was Glenn.
Yeah, someone can let us know.
Yeah, let us know. But I don't know.
I'm trying to think of, like, what's her resume? What qualifications?
I'm not saying that she shouldn't be part of the conversation. I mean, she does seem like she is the Secretary of Agriculture there. But it wasn't even like they're trading the anything that they are growing. Maybe she knows that they have nothing. She knows what they don't have. But it seems like everybody's on the same page about what they don't have.
Right. Yeah. Everyone seems to be pretty clear about that.
Yeah. We'll trade you corn. Maggie, do we have corn? Like, nope. Maggie, we'll trade you barley. Maggie, we have barley? Not really.
Not yet. No, we don't have any of that. Yeah. We got a little bit not of sorghum a big deal. In the back of a truck, but it's in the lake right now.
Not a big deal. Stop beating me up in the YouTube comments. But no, it was, again, I just thought that was really odd.
Yeah, a little odd. But that's the spot that she's in. You know, she's fielding these, you know, she's fielding these negotiations. She is, you know, she is the Samuel L. Jackson to Gregory's Kevin Spacey, or maybe it's vice versa. But they are trying to work out some deals here. And I think it's cool. I think it's a good utility for Maggie. I'm trying to think, like, who would be the better pick for that role in that group. It's probably not Rick, because Rick is very likely just to punch somebody's face off.
Yeah, but
it's not Daryl.
You know, Rick, even in his nice phase of like, even in his turned over a new leaf, happy in love, I still think that he would be, if this was a real Rick, be like, no, I'm in that negotiation. You can't take me out of the room for this one.
Do you think that he'd go straight back to Rick-tator mode?
Yeah, not even Rick-tator mode, but you would think he would. I mean, have we ever seen any important conversation that's ever been had on The Walking Dead where Rick is like, I'm just going to leave this one up to you guys. You let me know what you guys decide.
Not really. It was kind of refreshing, honestly.
you were for it.
You guys take care of that. I got other stuff to do.
I'm in love, everybody.
I'm in love. Yeah. Michonne and I are in love.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, no, but not a big deal. Not too big of a deal. Anyway,
I was screaming on top of a mountain, but I didn't have a mountain. I had a hilltop.
Yeah. And it all works out for Maggie that she ends up negotiating basically the same deal that Negan had with them, except ultimately that she's not going, they're not threatening to kill them. Although ultimately, doesn't that become the same deal as Negan once they make the deal for 50% and then they say they don't want to pay anymore?
It was kind of, you mean like Maggie would kill the Hilltop people like by like starving them almost by holding out their food?
Well, what happens if they don't pay their 50% at any point? Isn't that ultimately like the same deal? It's not like, okay, well, now you have to give us 60%. It's not going to be the charging interest.
Well, no, she takes 50% now.
50% up front?
That's what they were just loaded up with all that stuff. That's what they were saying. That's what Jesus was like. No one has ever gotten this much up front before. And that was the deal, is like, Negan keeps coming back. Your supplies are dwindling. Give us 50% now. And I think the idea basically is like, we'll hang on to it. We'll use it. We'll do our stuff with it. But we're establishing a good relationship here. So it's basically protecting 50% of their stuff while their supplies continue to dwindle, while these people, the Hilltop people, are dealing with Negan. I don't think the Rick Grimes gang is going to kill the Hilltop people. Although, I mean, they've done some scary stuff before.
I thought it was 50% ongoing, as in, you keep giving us 50% of what you make here, and then we will, you know, go kill Negan.
You know, maybe a rewatch will bear that out. My impression in the moment was it was like, give us 50% of your stuff right now. We're taking that right now, and this deal is on. That was my read on it.
Okay, well, we'll see. And again, not too big of a deal to nitpick. We also had Shades of Lost, where we end up with Sonogram.
Yeah, the sonogram. Although, do we get an answer on that? You're a sonogram reading expert at this point, right, Rob?
Yeah, what do you want to know from the sonogram?
Do we know anything? Was there any information that we should that we should know right now? They kind of kept that close to the chest.
I think it's too early to know, like, sex or anything, if that's what you want to, unless you want to confirm that it happened.
I'm just so nosy. I'm such a gossip. I just want to know what's going on.
Right. It just looks like everything is good. It seems like we heard a heartbeat and everything. It feels like that the sonogram was mostly just to change Abraham's mind. It really seemed like that this love triangle between Rosita and Sasha and Abraham is really starting to boil over. This is very tawdry.
Yeah. I think Abraham, he wants to make some pancakes, so to speak. He wants to wants to correctly pour his Bisquick into the mix and make sure that pancakes come out. He's ready for that. I think he's going to name his kid Flapjack.
Flapjack.
Flapjack Ford.
All right, so where do you think Abraham is leaning? Like, you know, you had the moment earlier in the episode where Freddie, I think, was the guy that Abraham almost killed, and he talked about how when he was going to almost die, Abraham almost stabbed him in the head.
As you do on The Walking Dead, it's not such a big deal.
Yeah. He saw a vision of his ex-wife or his wife that had died. And so Abraham, during the big fight, and we'll go through that as well, gets choked out. And you have to wonder, did Abraham see a vision of either Sasha or Rosita?
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting choice that the show didn't have that. You know, the show left that up to our imagination. There was no vision of Rosita. There was no vision of Sasha. But what we did see, I don't know if you caught this, Rob, is when Daryl helps Abraham back up onto his feet, Abraham's necklace that he got from Rosita was on the ground.
Oh, come on. Isn't Abraham kind of a douche for picking Sasha over Rosita?
If that's the direction he's going, probably, yeah, because Rosita seems to be really into Abraham and hasn't really done anything to warrant being dumped on the way that Abraham seems to be macking it to Sasha.
And not for anything, like, he went back at the point that, okay, let's say hypothetically that Abraham has fallen head over heels with Sasha. Isn't it Abraham's duty to break up with Rosita? Isn't that the good guy thing to do, to break up with Rosita and not just go immediately back into sexual congress with her?
Right. Well, we need to know where this is going. I mean, we would have to see next week to figure out what all of that looks like. But based on, you know, their walks and talks in this episode, I didn't have the impression that Abraham and Sasha were doing anything other than getting closer and talking a lot. Unless you thought that there was something sexual going on there. I think that Abraham has certainly made his intentions clear.
Right. That he is head over heels for Sasha.
Right. And Sasha's like, cool, that's great. I changed my shift. You're going to be hanging out with Eugene now. Mm-hmm. So it didn't strike me that Sasha and Abraham have something physical going on right now.
No, I'm not saying that they did. But if now that Sasha is now replaced Rosita in the place where when Abraham is having a near-death experience, the last thing he's thinking about when he's dying is Sasha.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a little douchey if he doesn't deal with it properly. But I mean, I think we would have to see how that bears out. But that love triangle is very much alive, obviously. Rosita has no clue what's going on, it seems like. Sasha obviously knows how Abraham feels. I don't know how Sasha feels about Abraham, so Abraham could make a really bad move and
she made him a necklace.
Rosita made the necklace, yeah. So she clearly has feelings for Abraham still. I don't think that we have any indication that Sasha necessarily feels like super strongly about Abraham. So if Abraham were to dump Rosita and try to woo Sasha and it didn't work out, the whole thing's just a mess.
Okay. Abraham.
Spilled pancakes all over the place.
Yeah, he's spilling the pancakes all
over the place. Wasted Bisquick.
Okay. All right, let's talk about the the politics of the Hilltop and what's going on with Jesus and Gregory and everything going on there.
How psyched are you to see Xander Berkeley, George Mason of 24 on The Walking Dead? Because I'm super psyched.
I'm pumped up. And it appears that Hilltop is being run with the exact same proficiency that CTU was being run with during during that year, during that administration. Now,
is Gregory pre-radiation or post-radiation at this point? Is this before he is exposed to the radiation and he's just a total douche? Or is getting stabbed in the gut, is that like getting exposed to radiation and now he's like he's going to start being kind of a decent guy?
Yeah, but he's still going to be a douche.
Okay.
Jesus doesn't like him. Yeah. That's really that's our compass here in Hilltop.
Right, yeah. If Jesus doesn't care for you, then you're probably doing something wrong.
Right. If Jesus vouched for him, then I would go ahead and say thumbs up.
Yeah, but you're saying that he is running this place with the efficiency of CTU, which is to say not very efficiently at all.
Yeah, that somebody breaks in every season and then kills a bunch of people. There's really no security.
They leak nerve gas throughout the Hilltop.
Right. So,
who's the mole at the Hilltop?
Oh,
because there's got to be a mole.
Well, it was the
right guy
that tried to kill Gregory.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Craig's brother.
Yeah. And so it turned out that, so what was the problem here? That they shorted Negan? They gave him 49% of the stuff?
It was something like that. There was an implication that part of the deal that they have is, 50% of our stuff, and it seemed like they didn't have a full 50%. So, they lost some people died, one person, poor Craig, he's been taken by the Saviors, and the only way to get Craig back was to assassinate Gregory on Negan's behalf.
Yeah.
So that was the move.
Don't they have a lot of 50% of things?
Sounds like life with the Saviors is pretty cushy.
I mean,
plush.
They had already given 50% of what they had to Negan quite recently. And then they were giving a big haul to Rick and company and loading everything into their truck. It's not like they were sitting there with like their pockets and we have nothing left. They seem to still have a lot of things.
So they had a big stock to begin with, is what you're saying.
Apparently. I mean, how often does Negan come by?
That first 50%, it diminishes, and then it's like still a big chunk of stuff. This whole life at Hilltop seems like it's not bad. They have that awesome mansion with windows everywhere.
But no ammo.
No ammo. They are low on ammo. They have spears and like medieval weapons. Maybe Daryl can borrow a crossbow or just a regular bow from
Yeah, or a bro.
Or a bro, in fact, he could have one of those as well.
Josh, I want to talk about the big fight. Okay, so...
Okay, let's do it.
All right, so we end up with... what's the name of the guy who tries to kill Gregory?
I believe that was Nathan. Nathan for you.
Okay, Nathan for you. He tries to kill Gregory. He stabs him in the gut, and then all hell breaks loose. Was Jesus fighting in this battle?
I didn't see Jesus being super interactive.
Didn't that strike you as weird? Isn't Jesus like the ultimate fighting machine as demonstrated in last week's episode that he could best both Daryl and Rick in hand-to-hand combat?
We do have that impression from Jesus from last week. I think that you got to cut him a little bit of slack because all hell is breaking loose in his hometown between people that he would not expect to be going at each other. Like, I don't think that he thinks of Nathan as a guy who's just going to stab George Mason in the stomach for no reason.
Yeah. I don't know. I felt like that. It was weird to me.
A little shell-shocked.
A little shell-shocked. I mean, for Jesus, who seems like he's a guy who thinks fast on his feet. I thought that was odd that he was not more in the fray.
Yeah, well, he wasn't. And it's really, it's like Rick's guys and Daryl. These are people who just immediately, they're basically just looking for an excuse to kill whenever they have a shot. So they were ready to fight. They were ready to throw down. They're accustomed to this stuff. And I think that they are probably more fighters than Jesus. Jesus might be the better fighter. But I think in terms of, exposure, in terms of regularity, I think it's Rick's group who are just like ready to spring to action. No time at all.
Okay, now, Jesus really did live up to the Jesus title, though, at the end of this whole bloodbath where Rick ended up like ripping a guy's neck open with a knife.
Yeah, it was gross. It was pretty gross.
That was really gross. That
he stands up, he's covered in blood, everyone's looking at him, and Rick's just like, what? What's the big deal? This is a classic Rick Grimes moment.
Just another day at the office.
Yeah. SSDD.
So Jesus is the peacemaker.
Yeah, he brokers the peace. He's like, you guys don't go after Rick. First off, A, he's got a gun. He has a gun, people.
They have guns.
And And the other thing is Nathan was a coward, and let's not pretend that he wasn't. And then Rick is like, hey, can I do anything else? And it's like, no. No, you're good. You did everything. You did so much.
Yeah. Why isn't Jesus the leader of these people?
He says it's easier. I understand that. Don't you know? Like, you want to be like second in command. Second in command is a great role. Like, you can have like the respect and the love of the people, but the person who's first in command takes all the shots.
Mm.
So you kind of just like, you get to bend the ear of the people, but you don't have to take on the full responsibility. Great spot to be in. Second place is where you want to be. You don't get blue shelled, Rob.
Yeah.
You avoid the blue shells.
That's true.
So it's good. It's good to be second spot.
All right. So Jesus gets everybody. Hey, calm down. All right. We got to get Craig back. Do we want Craig back?
Oh, man. Who's the sadder Craig? The Craig of The Walking Dead or the Craig of South Park? Both Craigs just seem to be the butt of the joke.
Walking Dead Craig makes great baked eggs. Have you ever had a baked egg?
We don't eat a lot of eggs in my household. My
oh,
wife
yeah,
is
that's
allergic
right.
to eggs,
that's right.
So it doesn't happen very often.
I'm intrigued.
So I can't say I have. Yeah.
I'm interested to know how a baked egg would go, but
baked egg with green tomato.
Okay, sure.
So apparently it's very good.
Why not? So here's my question, Josh, but why does Negan want Greg dead?
Well, if Gregory shorted them, if he screwed over the saviors, then maybe Negan is thinking, let's kill this guy and install someone else in power.
By a lot, did he short him? I mean, I feel like that Gregory seems to have been playing ball with Negan for quite some time. I mean, was he grossly short?
If it was, maybe it was a gross shortage. Maybe it was a slight shortage, and Negan is just a very particular, nitpicky guy. Either way, Negan doesn't seem like the type of person where you mess with him at all without severe consequences. So I think it's kind of just like a setting an example type of thing.
Because I almost feel like with Negan, are they going to install somebody who's going to be more submissive than Gregory? I mean, it feels like that Gregory rolled over pretty easy for Negan.
He rolled over very easy, but at the same time, like, he's not exactly a pleasant person to be around.
I guess so.
We saw his negotiations with Maggie, and it's not like he's afraid of Maggie or anything, so he's just mouthing off to him. But just kind of generally, that seems to be who Gregory is attitude-wise, just somebody who's a little crotchety and tough to be around. So maybe Negan's like, I don't want to deal with that guy anymore. He's got a stupid face. I'm done with his stupid face. I want you to stab him. Just get rid of him. Maybe you can be in charge and we'll bring Craig back.
Okay.
Maybe Craig will be in charge. King Craig.
Maybe Craig will come back. Now, in terms of the timeline here, so what are we doing? We're going back to Alexandria to sort of mount the attack on Negan?
That's what it sounds like. It sounds like, Rick and the gang, they have made this pitch. We will take your stuff. We will set up a trade. The goods that we are offering is basically being a counter Negan strike force. We will do that for you. Let's go back to Alexandria, drop off these supplies, and figure out what to do next. I think they've got some strategizing they got to do. So potentially next week could be pretty talky dead. I think that we could have a lot of that kind of hand wringing over what's the next step. How do we do this? How do we find this guy? They brought one of the people back from the hilltop who knows how to get to Negan's spot, who knows the compound, he said. So I think that we've got some planning to do here. That does seem to be the next step.
Speaking of talky dead, did you happen to see the panel on Talking Dead tonight?
I saw a little bit of the Talking Dead. I tend to watch the first like 8 minutes of Talking Dead before we get on here. That's my ritual.
Yeah.
Who was it? We had Lauren Cohen.
Yes, Maggie.
We had Tom Payne, who plays Jesus.
Well, we had announced, we had Maggie. Kid Cudi was the was the celebrity guest. And then mystery guest was hyped all night.
Right.
And then
Jesus.
It turned out it was Jesus. I don't know why sometimes they just hide who the mystery guest is.
Well, Chris Hardwick said at the top of it, he said, like, just so you know, the mystery guest isn't always somebody who's dead. It's actually Jesus this week. So maybe he's just trying to throw you off. He's been listening to the podcast. He's heard your complaints.
Sure. Why? I guess so. But I mean, it's like a pretty, if the mystery guest sometimes is not an exciting guest, then it also diminishes the hype of a mystery guest.
I guess, to a degree. Although, how could you not be hyped when Jesus is in the building?
I guess so. Sure.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
Josh, what else about tonight's episode?
I don't know. I think that probably we could start getting into some questions, and that'll start opening up anything else that we haven't talked about.
Jog our discussion. Why don't we start here? with our good buddy, Will Northrup.
Will Northrup says, so they have an ultrasound machine, but no bullets, which is easier to find in rural Virginia.
That's political.
Yeah. Well, I haven't been to rural Virginia in a little while. I don't know. I did think that having that machine seemed to me like that was pretty great that these guys have that. I was pretty surprised that they have that up and running. What did you think?
I mean, that did not blow my mind that they had the sonogram machine. It sounds like that they have had multiple babies there, that the doctor said that he was an OBGYN. So that did not seem that out of place to me that he would, they would have found the hospital. They would have gotten their hands on a sonogram machine or ultrasound.
Right.
That did not blow my mind.
What did you think of the doctor? Are you a fan of
the
doctor?
I like the doctor.
Yeah. So he's not Dr. Douche. What do we call the people when they're like Dr. Nice Guy? Dr. Cool Dude.
Dr. Cool Dude. I know. I did like him. I did think it was a little bit, kismet that, they just happened to find a doctor. Not only was he any doctor, I think you'd be happy to find like a podiatrist, but right. He happened to be an obstetrician.
The jackpot.
Yeah, you hit the jackpot.
His name is Harlan, according to the Walking Dead wiki.
Yeah. Okay.
I like that name.
All right. Let's take another question. This is from our Philly, our buddy, who says, what's the implication for our group now that they've transitioned from the people being attacked to the people planning attacks? Yeah, is this like the Terminus people?
Yeah, well, this is fun. I mean, we've seen this. I feel like this has been the evolution of this group. We've seen Rick's crew, start off as being a bunch of people camped with an RV and, afraid for their lives, to trying to find some humanity on a farm, to being really aggressive and capable of taking over a prison, to going to war with Woodbury. So they've gone to war before. They've been on the road a lot. They've been attacked and almost eaten by cannibals. They have been, people within Alexandria have questioned them and challenged them and tried to kill them. So they're really, they're war vets at this point. They're seasoned veterans. They are seasoned veterans of the apocalypse, and they know what's going on. They know what happened and what's going on. And I think that they're ready for this. I think they're primed and groomed. And I think that when you look at people in the apocalypse, it's hard to imagine a better group of people that's capable of pulling off what they're talking about doing. It's like, we can go to war with these people and we'll be good. We've done it before. Confrontation is not a problem. They're like the SEAL Team 6 of the apocalypse. It's crazy.
Do you think that Rick and his group are getting a little cocky?
In what way? That's like, we've dealt with all this stuff. There's nothing you can throw at us that we can't handle.
Right. They're like, there's nobody who we can't deal with. What, 20 guys? Oh, forget that. That's like, we
make it 50
in our sleep. Yeah. We're like, we turned a couple of their guys into a puddle a few weeks ago. These guys are nothing.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely something to that. It can be a dangerous attitude to have, but if you look at their track record, it tends to work out.
Track record is strong, but nobody, not even Maggie, is even saying like, maybe this isn't a good idea.
Well, she actually, I think, was one of the people who voiced a little bit of concern. She's like, this is going to cost us something. She says that to Rick when Rick, Michonne, and Glenn kind of have a
problem. Yeah, she expressed something in terms of that, that this is we're going to have to do something on our end. But when she finds out what that thing is, she does not say like, oh, this is a bad idea. Like, she's hesitant, like, whoa, they're going to want something from us. But when she finds out what that is, she's not saying like, hey, guys, like, no bueno.
Right. There's no major voice of dissent.
Michonne is on board. Daryl's on board.
She's on board.
Even pacifist Glenn is on board.
Seems like it. But there's other people in this group that might have different opinions. And I think the one big glaring one is Morgan. What happens when Morgan gets in the conversation?
Nobody's going to listen to him.
But who knows what he puts into effect to stop this from going too far? I think that that's an X factor. I think that that's a wild card that you have to consider. So for this to be something that's like unanimously agreed upon, I think it is right now. I would look at someone like Morgan to stir some S up. I feel like there's other people out there, too, who might not be wild about this, especially.
You think Carol's going to like it?
Oh, Carol loves it. Carol's going to be like, Rick, just send me. I've got this. Just tell me where it is, and I'm going to handle it solo style.
See, but Carol, I feel like, doesn't like any new people. I feel like she's going to say, what do we need them for? We're doing fine here on our own. Like, I could see being a little bit like, why are we going to go fight their battles for them?
I get that, but I think, like, when you weigh the two, like, what does Carol prefer? Like, she wants to stay away from new people, or does she want to go blow a ton of stuff up?
I don't think that she necessarily is like that. She wants to go and fight other people just for the sake of fighting.
Just for the thrill.
Yeah. I don't know if she wants to fight for sport. I just think that she's very protective of everybody.
I agree. I'm mostly kidding. But I think that she probably isn't going to love the idea, but she trusts Rick. She trusts this group, and she knows her capabilities, and she'll just get on board. I don't expect a lot of problems from Carol on that front.
Okay. All right. Emily Stobbs, Josh, what does she have to say?
Emily Stobbs says, do you think those cookies that Jesus was complimenting were made by Carol? That's right. I love that part in the beginning of the episode where Jesus is just talking about all of the different stuff that he knows about Alexandria. He's like, compliments to the chef. The cookies are awesome. Say hi to all 54 of your people for me. I think you got to imagine the cookies were made by Carol.
Yeah. How about that scene in the beginning of the episode where Carl pulls the gun on Jesus and he's like, I'm just waiting for your mom and dad to get dressed.
Yeah. And Carl's like, wait, what?
But Carl, what a bro. What a bro. He's totally cool with dad dating Michonne.
Yeah, he's totally
he's a shipper.
He's like, yeah, he's like, you know what? I've been seeing this happen. I've been watching the episodes. I've been listening to the podcast. I've watched The Talking Dead. Like, I know that this is sort of the direction things have been going in, and I'm okay with it.
Okay. All right, let's take another question. This is from Megan Murphy. Do you think that Rick and Michonne are going to be making pancakes anytime in the foreseeable future? Hashtag pour that Bisquick Rick.
Oh, my God.
Bisrick.
I think we need to let's slow our roll on the Bisquick and the pancakes for a minute. Like, I think, you know, Rick's already got two little pancakes of his own that he's dealing with. He's got Carl. He's got Judith. I don't think he's in a rush to make any more breakfast, maybe more breakfast, but different like varieties of breakfast food. I don't know. I'm lost in the metaphor, Rob. Help me out.
Yeah.
Get me out of here.
Everybody needs to just calm down with having these babies. Like, it's not even easy to have a baby not in the zombie apocalypse.
His baby fever.
Hey, everybody sees Judith and like, oh, she never even cries. This is fantastic. We should get one.
It turns out that Judith is going to get a lot of people killed because she is inciting baby fever and everyone is going to be in for a world of hurt when they realize that they are not as awesome as that child.
People are very confused about how this is going to go down.
It's like the last baby that they've met. Like, you know, it's like, oh, I didn't remember that babies were so chill.
Yeah.
This baby's so dope. I want one.
Right. So,
Yeah. One thing on the Rick and Michonne thing is, how do you feel like the show handled it in the week following the getting together of Michonne? Did you like the way that the show played it this week?
I thought that the show did a good job with it, that they didn't really spend a lot of time on it tonight. I did feel like it was a little bit like when Rick was driving the car and he had to hold Michonne's hand as that was going on. I was a little bit like, hey, two eyes on the road, Rick. I feel like that, you know, almost every single time somebody's driving a car on this show, something bad happens.
So you want like hands on the wheel, both hands on
the wheel. Yeah, 10 and 2.
10 and 2. Is that what they're, are they still teaching that? I've heard they're teaching something.
I don't know. I wouldn't know.
But what do you think of the fact that like everybody seemed to just like totally buy it? Everyone seemed to be like totally on board. Everyone just accepted. It's like, okay, yeah, Michonne, I guess that's happening. We're good. That's good.
I did really like the scene between Abraham and Daryl where Abraham is like, so Rick and Michonne, how long do you think that they were? What did he say? Bugglin' umpies.
Umpin' buglies.
And Daryl, he's such a stick in the mud. He's like, I don't care. Whatever.
It is fun. Yeah, it is funny that, you know, there has been talk about, like, what is Daryl Dixon's sexuality? Why doesn't that guy have any sort of romance storyline? Everyone loves Norman Reedus, and there's been talk on, like, every possible angle of that character from that perspective. And I like how Abraham, he has that conversation with Daryl. You're right, Daryl's such a stick in the mud about it. He really doesn't want to talk about it, but then he really shuts it down when Abraham is like, have you ever thought about it? And Daryl's like, no, don't talk to me. Mm-hmm. He just, like, sprinted out of the room. The one chance that we've had on the show for like Daryl to talk about romance and sex and stuff, and he's just like, nope, not talking about that. It's not my topic.
Yeah. Abraham was so funny tonight. Abraham was killing me the whole episode.
It's a great, great episode for Abraham. You said before we got on here that you would give Abraham the fish.
Yeah, he might be my favorite character on The Walking Dead right now.
He's great. He's great. He's got great dialogue. He's just ridiculous.
He's just nailing it. Well, I'm not sure. He is really, doing very well on the show.
Oh, my God. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
He's doing very well in a lot of ways.
Will Northrop, Gregory speaks the common tongue. What? No High Valyrian?
No High Valyrian. Dracarys. Yeah. That's not been introduced. I mean, the further we explore the Seven Kingdoms of Alexandria, perhaps we will start to meet people who can train dragons and speak Valyrian.
Was I reading too much into this, Josh? Was Gregory hitting on Natalie tonight?
It's Maggie.
Oh, sorry.
Get it right. I think he was. I think he absolutely was. And Maggie even straight up says, like, could you stop hitting on me? Could we just, like, talk? I just want to have a conversation with you.
Yeah. Did she share that information with Glenn?
No, I don't think so. Okay. We didn't really get, like sort of the download from Maggie's perspective on Gregory to Glenn, or like her read on the whole situation to Glenn. She didn't really say anything. So she seems like she has sort of kept that to herself. She doesn't seem super threatened by him because he's just such a dweeb that this guy's just like such an obvious douche. So, yeah.
Okay. What about this one, Josh?
This is from Bradass TV. Since we know Hilltop was doing fine, doesn't that make Jesus a douche for stealing their truck? Jesus douche, anyone? I feel like Jesus, he articulates it pretty well. And I feel like he made a pretty clear case for why he did that. He's got his people to take care of. He has his own community. Rick and Daryl seemed like shady dudes, so he just didn't want these shady dudes to have this truck, so he left them behind. And he's like, okay, well, now I've gotten to know you and I've seen your operation, and you guys don't seem to be such shady dudes. You seem like good people.
I mean, shouldn't Jesus in some way have made them whole in terms of, like, you know, I feel so bad that I sunk that truck full of stuff. Like, let me at least give you guys something.
Yeah. Maybe. I think that's, you know, like they could have gone in that direction of like, hey.
Yeah. It really seemed as though, Josh, that Jesus was like, boy, I'd love to do something, but, you know, my hands are tied here. And, you know, when my hands are tied, there's absolutely nothing I can do to get out of that type of situation where my hands are tied.
Yeah, he is the master of getting out of sticky situations, Jesus. I thought that would be, I don't know. I feel like he makes them whole by, you know, negotiating this truce and this peace where he is able to, he is able to get these guys, you know, 50% of their stuff and all this stuff. So I feel like Jesus, he's making good.
Okay. What do you got from this one?
Vader girl. I also think Jesus and Daryl will have a relationship.
Oh, come on.
Wow. Are we shipping that? Oh, man.
Hey, look, it would be hot, but I don't think that's where we're going.
It would be hot. Listen, in the world of Rishon, anything is possible.
Yeah, anything is possible. Okay. Yeah. And Will, what is the sexiest breakfast-related euphemism? Making pancakes, frying some eggs, or other? Well, I know we talked about baking eggs in this video or in this episode, but I don't know. I don't know if we had frying eggs.
We did making pancakes.
Is frying eggs a thing?
Yeah, you can fry eggs. Have you never had a fried egg?
I've had a fried egg. Uh-huh. Is that a sexual euphemism?
Not one that I've used, but once again, it's not really. Eggs are not part of the common tongue in my household.
Outside of the movie Hot Shots, I'm not sure necessarily if that's
part one or part two.
Part one.
I think making pancakes was good. Pouring the Bisquick, I thought that was really funny. I don't know, French toast, that seems hot.
I guess so.
Right, French toast to be pretty sexy. I don't know.
Okay.
Sorry, this got very strange.
Our Philly, on a scale ranging from our beloved cabin douche to the much maligned Ron douche, where exactly does Gregory douche score?
Well, I think Gregory douche right now is the reigning douche on the show. You know, it's hard to imagine somebody on the show that we have met currently that is douchier than Gregory. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, he is probably the biggest douche going, but he is not somebody that is like Nick Douche from The Walking Dead, where it's like when he's on the screen, I am rolling my eyes like, oh, please, somebody kill him.
Yeah.
Like we were, even with Father Gabriel.
For a while with Father Gabriel, we were really there. But you know, all it takes is like one act of courage, and then you're on the right side of
things. You're back. Okay, a couple more questions.
You're back on the
team. All right, the previously aforementioned Cavendish. What does he have to say?
Yeah, Cavendish is back. Cavendish says, "Is George Mason 2.0 douche going to cause a radioactive situation between Glenn and Maggie in the future?" Okay. That's a 24-ism. Solid 24 jokes. I love George Mason. Oh God. Xander Berkeley, great actor. He's great. He's great in anything. Like, it doesn't even matter if the thing he's in is very good. Just him being involved is fantastic. You know, as Todd in Terminator 2, as the good doctor and the not douche doctor in Gattaca, George Mason on 24. Xander Berkeley's the man. I'm so happy to have him on The Walking Dead. I feel like that can only be a boon for the show. Just to have that guy in the mix, I think, is a good thing. In the pancake mix.
Should they consider dropping the nuclear device on Negan?
Yeah, that could be a
Could Gregory fly the plane?
Yeah. But he has to hide in the back of the plane and only make himself, Rick, go live your life. I've got this. Okay. I've got a pilot license.
Our Philly also wants to know, are Rick, Daryl, Michonne, and the Gang of Heroes officially for hire? Is mercenary work a good business model post-apocalypse?
It could be. You know, this could be a thing. Like, what if this works out? What if the Negan thing is just like, you know, it's like Wolves 2.0 or Terminus 3.0, I guess, and it's just like a blip on the radar. It's actually not as big of a threat as it's being made out to be, and they just handle it real fast. They just take care of it immediately. And then they're like, you know what, we're pretty good at this. Maybe we could just be the mercs. You know, they could just send us out. No disintegrations, but we will take care of things. We'll be bounty hunters. We'll have a great time. It'll be the best.
Be a different direction for the series.
It'd be a good reality show.
Yeah. All right, Josh. I think that's all the questions that we have for tonight.
That's it.
Yeah, so where are we going from here in terms of our Walking Dead coverage?
We are going to have a big week. We will have the Walking Dead book club with myself and Jessica Leese. We will have that posted midweek. We will record that tomorrow night. So get those questions in if you want to. PostShowRecaps.com/feedback or TWD at PostShowRecaps.com. Just put spoiler in the title so we know that you're talking about the Walking Dead book club. But get those questions in. I thought this was a fun episode from a comic book standpoint. There were definitely some scenes that were directly lifted from the comics that I'm really excited to go back and read that stuff and talk that through with Jess. So we've got that. Then we'll have feedback show this week. Same way. Get your questions in that way. TWD at postshowrecaps.com. postshowrecaps.com/feedback. And we love the voicemails for that show as well. So postshowrecaps.com/voicemail. And we'll also get through your comments here on postshowrecaps.com and the YouTube page.
And don't forget Better Call Saul. New podcast coming tomorrow night after the episode. Myself and Antonio Mazzaro. Plus, this weekend on Most Shows Recapped, we talked about the first two nights of Vinyl, which was very fun to talk about. Josh and Antonio and myself.
Yeah, that was really fun. We'll have another Most Shows Recapped this week. Rob will not be on hand. My good friend Kevin Mahadeo will be on hand. We're going to be talking about Agent Carter, the second season, which is ending this week. Potentially final. Carter. Potentially the final season of Agent Carter, depending on where things go. So we'll talk about that on Most Shows this week. But Rob, you will not be on hand because you have other shows to discuss.
That's right. House of Cards is going to be back this weekend. So talk about more excitement in the greater DC area. It's not just The Walking Dead. It is also going to be the return of House of Cards season number 4.
Lots going on. Okay. Very fun stuff.
Yeah, make sure you don't miss any of it. Subscribe to Post Show Recaps. Go to postshowrecaps.com/iTunes or search for Post Show Recaps in your favorite podcatcher. You could also get our Walking Dead only feed at postshowrecaps.com/TWD. iTunes. Thanks so much to Alex Kidwell, who was pulling questions for us tonight. We'll be back with Josh and Jessica Leese talking comic books and more feedback later on this week. Josh, do we have a hashtag?
Ooh, hashtag. Do you have a good one? You're laughing. I see you laughing.
No, I don't know if we have a good one. How about Biskrick?
Biskrick? I like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, let's go with Biskrick.
There you go. All right.
Make the Biskrick happen.
Sweet flaming mercy. Okay.
Oh, my God.
All right. Have a good one, everybody. Take care. Bye.